Sacramento Police Department.
Todd Henry, Sacramento Sheriff's Department.
Amani Suarez, Volunteers of America.
Deion Dwyer, Downtown Partnership.
Emily Hawkins, City of Sacramento.
Sarah Bontrager, City of Elk Grove.
David Houston, Cotter County.
John Foley, Sacramento South Elk Housing.
Nick Lee, Sacramento Steps Forward.
Michelle Watts.
Joan Bird, Loaves and Fishes.
Dorothy Lambert, Lambert's
New World.
So I've been getting from a real life church and a never closed triage center on the front end of the continuum of care.
Jill Eskow, Alphaville.
Brian Talcott, Women's Empowerment.
Gabby Herr, Ambassador's Office.
Perfect, Sam. Danny Marquez with Marquez Consulting.
I'm Andrew Griffin with Sacramento Steps Forward.
I'm Stephen Heisler with City of Rancho Cordova.
Gabrielle Salazar, Sacramento Steps Forward.
Jen Fleming with Mercy Housing.
Mike Jaskey, Sacramento Act.
Kay Nelson, Movement Social Services.
Patricia Rosenbaum, Next Move.
Great, and welcome.
Martin Roth, Salvation Army.
Welcome, everybody. It's nice to have a returning board member, Katie, welcome back. And also to have Amani at her first, I think, meeting.
Second.
Excuse me. And nice to have everybody here. We will start with the minutes. Bill?
Minutes are in your packet. And online, we will entertain a motion to accept. We have a move to accept.
Second.
We have a second. Wonderful. Any further discussion? All of those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Abstention because you weren't here. Motion carried.
Chair's report. The Sacramento Steps Forward Board is expanding its membership. They have reached out to members of the faith community. Kaiser Hospital has joined on the board level. So next month, when those nominations have been accepted and integrated into the board, we'll provide a list of the current SSF board members. Ryan is slightly delayed, so we will skip his report and go on to new business and the update on the mayor's efforts and the city's efforts.
Thanks. So I'm Emily Halpin. I'm the homeless coordinator for the City of Sacramento. I'm in the office of the city manager, but working closely with the mayor on the city's initiatives. Obviously, he's leading a lot of the effort. So I was just asked to give a brief update on stuff that we're doing. And so I don't have anything formal. So I have three things that I thought I would share with the group, and I'm happy to answer questions. And then Dan could also answer questions if there's any from the police side. So the three sort of big things that we've been working on, as you all probably know, we opened a series of warming centers this winter. The three locations were, there's a downtown location, the Southside Pool House, and the Wind Drop-In Center. They had differing regulations on sort of when they opened, but in general they were open from around Christmas to the end of March. They did all close on March 31st, and so they are closed. I am preparing an end of season report, and I was hoping to have it mid-April, but it's probably going to be more like the end of April, where we're going to look in depth at sort of who we served, what we know about them, how many got connected to services, some demographics. I will say just sort of anecdotally, some of the initial data I looked at specifically in the downtown location was that we were serving some really elderly, really frail folks, and so we certainly want to follow up on what that means and how we might be able to take some of the lessons learned from those warming centers to broader discussions of shelter in general. I think, for me at least, one of the big things is that all of our warming centers were essentially low to no barrier, as low as we have seen, I think, in our community in terms of allowing pets and partners and no screenings and basically, I'm looking at Dan, but we did not have any major issues, and that is a plus, I think. We had issues with community concerns, but it wasn't related to the behavior necessarily in the center. It was more related to the behavior in the surrounding areas when it was closed, I would say. I think that's quite fair. So look for that. I will certainly share the report with everybody and when it's available, and would love any input on that. The second major thing, as you all know, we've been working on together, a lot of us, the county and the city and SHRA, is related to the access to public housing resources. On March 21st, both the city and the county did approve, acting as the housing authorities, did approve the allocation of a number of resources for populations experiencing homelessness. So I know I'm working with SHRA on the implementation of that. I don't think Sarah's here. Maybe at some point she can give us an update. I know she posted some of the public noticing started Monday for that, I believe, and so there's a 60 or 90 day comment period for their admin plan changes that will effectuate the actions that the city and the county asked. So I haven't yet looked at them. I think the language is pretty general, but I think that everybody might want to go take a look at them. And then the third big thing, which frankly is consuming us right now, but is really exciting, as you might all know, the city is applying for the Whole Person Care Pilot Program. It's a Medi-Cal waiver program. It is really designed to be a county-run initiative, but we are applying as a city. We submitted an application per state regulations on March 1st, but we've been working with the State Department of Healthcare Services since then to modify. The application we submitted was really really done by WellSpace Health, so huge, I don't see Jonathan here either, but they did the bulk of the work to get us a place in line, and we've been working with DHCS since then on modifying the application to really reflect the broader system and not just WellSpace's initial vision, which is, many of you know, they're familiar with their T3 program and the ICP beds. So I've had little side conversations with a lot of you, and please don't take the lack of communication as a lack of interest in your input. It's just been this shortened, this crazy, like, four-week time frame to turn around an application that probably should have been taken 6 months. I mean, it's just, and it's in the healthcare world, which is not by any means my expertise. So we will have our final revisions to the state by Friday. And I'll be very happy and excited to share it with all of you. I think that the potential that we're looking at is bringing in anywhere between $6 and $8 million a year for 5 years to our community for the types of things that many of you already engage in: outreach, navigation, care, what they call care coordination in the healthcare world, what we might call case management, and then housing support. So definitely something that we're really excited about. Don't want to downplay, it's a huge lift. So getting the application is step one of about 125 steps. And so we've got a lot of work ahead of us, and I think there's going to be opportunities for everybody at this table to engage in standing the program up. And I'm also, again, once the application is finished, I'm happy to share it with you all. It'll be finished at 4:59 p.m. Those are three things I wanted to share. If there's any other questions, I'm happy to try to answer them or take them back to the council.
Are there any questions? Just thank you for all that good work.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks. Well, it's not just me, but thank you. I just want you to
pass it on to everyone.
I will. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily.
I apologize for being late. Apparently, you can't go to spring camp without your Levi shorts. So, feed them over to my daughter.
This is known fact.
It's a known fact. I should have known. I mean, the fact that I had both washed and dried ready was impressive enough. All right. So, I wanted to allay any fears of the stability of Sacramento Steps Forward based on the article that came out. I even had family calling. Is everything all right? Yes, it's fine. So, we don't have a $2.5 million cut to our budget. Matter of fact, we have on the allocation from HUD, it was a $772,000 increase in that cycle. So we were held whole. There is an adjustment of $1.2 million that will go to county programs, all designated for homeless services. So that's there's three navigators and one contract with WIND, and then dollars that were a partnership for local rapid housing. So those will be used for the flexible housing, some other projects that the county is working on. And then we had $140,000 that is going to go over to 211, which we need as part of our system. It's the should be that first call that individuals make, and that was in coordination with the city. So I just wanted to make sure everyone was okay and life's still good. And we meet on a regular basis with our partners at the county and the city and SHRA on a daily basis. So those partnerships are still very solid. And I'm comfortable with where we're at. So as much as I think many of us talked to or wrote to the author of that article, I don't think the real message came through. So anyway, that's all I had to say. I just want to make sure everybody understood that and that I clarified some of the information.
Right.
Yes.
At some point, maybe it was at the meeting that SRHA approved the homeless priority, they announced they were getting a 5% cut in a certain one of their funding categories from HUD. Is there anything like that happening with the funding streams that flow through your process?
Not currently. There's been nothing stated. None of the housing subsidy programs have been cut, but they are subject to cut. So in the submitted budget at the federal level, they're more like the home program, the maintenance programs, some of those, but not the rent subsidy programs yet.
Is it fair to say that your budget's gone up over the last 3 years? I mean, with HUD?
Yeah, since we started, our annual is $4 million over what it was in 2011.
John.
Yeah, Brian, this is a little bit off topic, but I think it's the same topic. I sort of understand our role here, our advisory board, in relation to the HUD funding. I mean, ultimately, we have to vote on approving the application, so I sort of get that. But I don't understand exactly how you view our role in terms of the work you're doing, where the county is funding it or not funding it, where the city is funding it or not funding it. How do you see us fitting in with those?
Well, I think as an advisory board, you can weigh in on those expenditures, but ultimately that would be the SSF board making those decisions. And it's in partnership with the funders themselves on what they want to fund and how it's allocated.
So I guess my concern is that if we do have a role in strategic planning and that kind of, which I'm not sure exactly how you see our role with that, if HUD funds certain stuff and doesn't fund other stuff, and we have gaps that they're not funding, and we turn to the county or the city to do that, or such, or whoever, I mean, we sort of need some, I mean, if we're going to be useful in terms of strategic planning, we need to have some role there. I'm just not sure how you see us.
You know, I'm convening my board, the SSF board, and a representative group from this body on Friday to review what life looks like for SSF kind of in our new environment, right? And so from that program, I'd like to get some direction from the group and then really utilize our leadership group that are the members of each of the chairs of our subcommittees and the executive to really start that kind of strategic planning. To make sure that all of our subcommittees are really on point with tasks and deliverables that can be brought up to this group in a more refined way so that we know exactly what it is that we're responsible for. And then I'd like to see that better at this body for feedback. Does that make sense?
I don't want to keep thinking. I got this going quite soon, but. Can we do here? But it sounds like we're going to be talking more about that already.
Yeah.
So, sure.
That's
fine. Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay. Great. System performance measurement continue.
Okay. In your packets, you should have two items. One is a revised version of last month's PowerPoint. The official report that we submitted to HUD in August, the consistent performance measures. So I thought it might be helpful to kind of see what it looked like as submitted to HUD. You can look through this at your leisure. We'll stick with the PowerPoint, but I wanted you to know what this document is. The actual materials. This month's presentation differs from last month in that we removed all of the data points for 2016 because those actually are still, those haven't been submitted to HUD yet. So they're due May 31st, and we're still putting up the data. So it was premature to drop those in, and it's also very confusing to look at those two separate years kind of embedded in one chart. So we pulled that out. What I really want to be able to do is educate this board on what we have already reported to HUD for our year one benchmarks on the 7 performance measures that we'll talk about in more detail here, and then come back to you regularly with updates on when we submitted the 2016 data, and then tracking our performance on these measures over time, because that is how HUD is measuring our performance in the annual application. You could show me the PowerPoint.
Oh, yes. Sorry, one moment.
And was this in your packet that you emailed to us, or just?
No, okay. No. We can, but we will provide it. Okay.
Is this the one, Michelle?
So, an overview of how accreditation will run, and I'll go through these first sections somewhat quickly since we did already look at them last month. But background and purpose of the measures, roles and responsibilities, a couple bullet points on things that impact this data, then looking at the seven measures themselves, including our desired outcomes and our performance. Background slide. HUD began requiring that COCs report on these seven system performance measures in the last NOFA. So as I've said a couple times, we did submit this data in August as part of the Regime of Care application. This data serves as the benchmark year. The reporting timeframe is October 1st, 2014 to September 30th, 2015. And that last bullet there, if we were to find a significant error in this data set, HUD is giving communities a chance to resubmit benchmark data when we submit this next round of data at the end of May. I don't anticipate that we'll have any corrections, but just know that that opportunity exists. If we do change this data, we'll be sure to let the board know. So the purpose of moving to regular reporting on these system performance measures is to evaluate our performance from year to year as part of NOFA competitions. So HUD will be looking at each continuum and hoping to see us make improvements on the seven measures, more so than comparing one COC to another COC. Additional purposes are to set collective goals based on a common understanding of defined metrics, moving performance measurement from the project level to the system level, and helping COCs monitor progress systematically and identify areas of high performance and areas in need for improvement. So we should be using these measures in an ongoing fashion moving forward. A little bit more about roles and responsibilities. While SSF collects the data and produces the system performance measures report, everyone has an important role to play. So the service providers, of course, deliver the services and enter the data. And then SSF, as the HMIS lead agency, maintains the system and analyzes the data that's been entered. And then this advisory board and COC leadership identify strategies to improve our performance over time. And then finally, before we get into the actual measures, there are a few things that we should keep in mind as impacts on this data. So things like our HMIS bed coverage could change us. For example, if we added an emergency shelter that performs significantly different than the ones that are currently in the system, we could see a jump in any number of metrics because we've added all these beds to the system. It wouldn't necessarily mean that anything's actually changed, but anytime HMIS bed coverage changes, it can impact the bed. Project closures and new projects, same impact. And then, of course, data quality is always an issue that we're looking at on the way to ensure that we have the best quality so that we have the most accurate information. So the seven measures themselves include length of time homeless, returns to homelessness, the number of homeless persons, employment and income growth, first-time homelessness, homeless prevention, and then successful outreach placements, and successful permanent housing placements and retention permanent housing. And as you'll remember from last month, much every one of these measures has multiple components embedded within it, and we'll jump right into the first one. which is length of sentence. This metric we report in average and median number of days. So length of time homeless is measured both as length of time in emergency shelter, and then a separate metric for length of time in emergency shelter and transitional housing combined. And then in the next cycle, we'll be reporting on the length of time people actually spent on the street, not just in programs. That wasn't collected for the 2016 benchmark year, but we will be reporting that moving forward. And this makes a little more sense when we look at the next slide. But our desired outcome is, of course, to reduce the length of time that people spend.
Our question's okay?
Yes.
I know it's a distinct program, homelessness measured. For ES, is it all of HMIS entered ES?
Yes.
But if it were outside of that, it would not. Outside of HMIS,
right.
It would not. But you add up three shelters, stays in three different places.
Right, right.
Thank you.
This, obviously, it all comes from the HMIS, so the program's not in the system. Its data won't be reflected here. And with the exception of the employment and income-related metric, these are for all programs, not just HUD funds. So taking a look at the actual data for this metric, you can see the emergency shelter average length of stay is 64 days, and the median is 35. So for this tells us that there's a cohort of folks who stay a really long time because of the gap between the median and the average. That is a really smart place to start looking at how we can turn the curve on this measure. So taking a look at who is staying the longest and what they need to turn the curve. We jump over to the next two bars that shows the combined average and median length of stay for emergency shelter and transitional housing combined. So the average is 130 and the median is 61.
And is that just for people who go into transitional housing?
Any time spent in transitional housing is added into that.
Right. But it doesn't include those who only want to emergency shelter. It's not an open review.
So the first two bars are just time in emergency shelter, and then the next two bars add time in transitional housing.
But you
had to
touch both?
Yeah.
To be in this bar?
No, you don't have to touch
both. Okay, so this would include those who only stay in an emergency shelter.
Right. Okay, I understand.
Yes,
well. Mm-hmm.
That's what I
guess.
Thank you.
And can I just ask why you show it that way as opposed to just showing just transitional?
HUD designed this. Specifications for the report, so I'm not sure why they should frame it that way. That's something else too that we can I can keep notes on as I make this presentation. Things that we'd like to see in a different way locally, because what HUD wants isn't going to line up perfectly with what we want here locally.
Yeah, and it might be helpful on that because initially it just sort of like I don't know why you do it that way, and so understanding HUD. That's sort of the way HUD wants you to display the data and collect it is helpful. And then you're right, then that can tell us, oh, but if we have the data, we could display it differently in addition to what we're showing.
Right, right. Okay. And in terms of time and programs by project type, we can run all kinds of numbers. So anything that folks are interested in seeing, ask for it.
Michelle, you pointed out that the difference between average and median would be a motivator to figure out why. Do we have data that exists now to help explain that why, or does that require additional data that doesn't yet exist?
We have the data to look at that. What we need to do is look at the client level for the folks who have the longest length of stay, and all of that is within the system, and then work with the shelter providers to see how we can reduce that time in shelter and meet the needs of the folks who are just in the shelter programs for a really long time.
Amani? So I was curious,
Are there designated homeless programs that are not reporting into HMIS?
There are some programs that are, like Union Gospel Mission, that not participate in HMIS. Yeah.
Is that the only one?
You have 80%, I think.
Mm-hmm. Our coverage is over 80% of the beds in our community are in the HMIS.
Yeah.
So how many beds, because that's an easy way to put it, are not covered? In the hospital, yeah. Is that just so it's
yes.
Like their 80 or whatever?
Yeah,
and maybe small little
yep.
things.
Right, little programs.
What about we?
For not in the system.
Right, they don't enter an HMIS, so they're on the housing inventory, but not.
Erin? So this may be a little bit in the weeds, and that, and just tell me if it is. But I'm looking at the performance measurement module form that you gave us for what we reported last year, and section 1.1 and 1.2 is not exactly the same data set as what we're measuring in HUD change, because this one says persons in ES and SH, persons in ES, SH, and TH, and over here you don't have the same. So was it changed, or
so
what does that mean?
SH is not a project type that we have.
Okay.
So that's why it's not written on this.
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry.
What was the answer?
Oh, on the performance measurement SH. Module document, it refers in 1.1 and 1.2 to a SH project type, which is safe haven. We don't have that here, so that's why it's not mentioned in the coverage.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
you. So, jumping to the next slide. This measure 1B is the one I mentioned we didn't report on in the first benchmark year, where the time that a person has spent on the street, not necessarily in program, is also reported. So this, again, will be reported in the next cycle. Measure 2 measures returns to homelessness. So this is the metric that begins with everyone who exits to a permanent housing destination from emergency shelter, transitional housing, and permanent housing, both PSH and rapid rehousing, in the time period October 1st, 2012 through September 30th, 2013. So looking at all of those permanent housing exits, and then measuring of those who had that exit, what percent returned to homelessness within 6 months to 2 years, with the desired outcome, of course, that we would reduce the percentage of people who return to homelessness.
For us, return to homelessness is they were documented as exiting the permanent housing, but later returned at some point within the HMIS system.
Right, that's just this county.
Yes. Right.
Right, so a person could return to homelessness, not just the system, and then, of course, we would have a way of measuring.
Mm-hmm.
David? When you say documented, you mean documented in HIMS?
Yep.
Okay, so.
This slide speaks to what is a permanent housing destination. I combined a few things together, just it's quite a long list, but it could be anything from owning your own housing without any ongoing subsidy to staying with friends in a situation we report as permanent.
Thanks. Do you have any idea of how many are actually moving on to housing without a subsidy versus everything else?
That information is collected. I don't have it in my head, but yes, all those categories get tracked pretty closely. If that's something folks are interested in seeing. For overall, for permanent yeah. housing. Yes. Each of those individual categories, I don't have them, but I think that there's interest.
Can I ask a clarification to the question? We're just trying to understand the data, not
yes.
what the data tells us, right?
Right.
So if you exit from emergency shelter, And where does it matter where you go when you measure the return? So if you exit from emergency shelter and those are, the returns are measured,
So
do you go back, does it matter where you went?
You have to have exited to a permanent destination.
Okay.
One of the items in the list of things that are counted as permanent.
That only like counts, okay.
So if you were to leave an emergency shelter and say, I'm going to stay with my friends permanently, that is treated the same as exiting to a PSH program or, you know, getting an HCV and getting your own permit. So some of it is self-reported, I guess, is part of that equation. So we can't thoroughly vet all of the permit housing at the exits necessarily if a person leaves and reports that's where they're going. If we look at the data, this first slide shows the persons who exited to a permanent housing destination from by project type. So emergency shelter, transitional housing, and permanent housing, and then the total exits to permanent housing. So 2,280 is the total number of exits to permanent housing. And then when we look at the next slide, that's where we look at who returned from that.
How do you exit
from permanent housing to permanent housing?
in the PSH scenario, you may leave the PSH program, graduate, and rapid rehousing is also permanent housing, so you could graduate from rapid rehousing and no longer have subsidy or treatment.
So is it more accurate, just for people's understanding, to say people are exiting from either rapid rehousing or permanent supportive housing to then what you're distinguishing then permanent housing from those two types?
Yes.
But you could also be exiting the shelter from rapid rehousing, correct? If you're exiting to permanent housing using rapid rehousing, does that show up as an exit?
What's so, yes. Yeah, exit, your
you're in emergency shelter.
Right.
You go to rapid rehousing.
So rapid rehousing is counted as permanent once the person graduates from the program.
So while they're in there,
that
because the
shelter would have made that connection for an eventual permanent housing destination. So let me find out what
the context of there. Voluntary placement in particular time with TSH, if that didn't work out and they went to a higher level of supportive service, for example, is that moving from one kind of TSH to another?
So if you went from one program to another program, that was also permanent. I'm not sure how that's counted either. So it's the emergency shelter exit to rapid rehousing and then a PSH to PSH move. And how are those counted in this measure?
Yeah.
I will find out and, when we distribute the PowerPoint electronically, I'll include that.
Just a question. Total number of persons, that's number of people in a family, right?
Right, so it could be a single or family household.
Or family, and does it include children? Does this include?
This does, yes.
Yeah.
We're reporting on persons, yes.
Okay, so it's like zero to whatever. Okay.
Do you report also on households, which seems like the more interesting statistic?
I agree. That's not how HUD's collecting it. It is something that we could choose to measure by household locally or by singles and individuals.
So I'm trying to make sure again on this, because so this is, if you looked at this and tell me if I'm interpreting this correctly, it looks like we have more people who go to permanent housing starting from emergency shelters than from people leaving transitional housing. And is that just because there's more people in emergency shelter here?
Right.
Okay. Do we have a way of sort of
apples to apples?
Yeah, sort of proportionately just, again, you're sort of assuming you're going to have better success getting graduating people into permanent housing from transitional and rapid rehousing and those things.
And we have a large, I mean, the largest portion of the population is self-sustaining without a subsidized unit. And so coming out of shelters, we have a lot of folks that are going to the shelter and then sustaining housing on their own that come out of that environment.
I would venture to say this does not get us to an evaluation of an intervention, whether it's rapid rehousing or transitional.
Right.
It might give us feelings or clues, but it's just not enough.
So HUD wants this,
right?
And we have to do it because they want it to get the funding. But can we be using then the data in a different way than to get at what we're really wanting?
Right.
And so are you doing that now, or?
Yes, and that's, we're working on the systemic data currently with ABT and also in-house. And this, I just want to make sure everybody, because for us when we're communicating with HUD, we have to view it through this lens.
Right.
So I just want to make sure everybody is oriented to the lens when we're communicating to HUD, what it looks like. But certainly locally, we can break this down in a more meaningful way so that when we're looking at strategy and gaps, we're taking steps here to meet our goals.
So we said at the very beginning of this, this is trying to measure the COC performance. In order to get it, I think what you guys are talking about, that's a project level performance measure, which we do. And so I think that's maybe the difference. Is that kind of the difference, kind of?
It's also type of housing measure.
Right, but if you did a project level of various types, at that measure of various types, you wouldn't be able to get at that because we have that data, but that is not what this is trying to say at this point, right?
And this is HUD's first sort of pass at collecting and standardizing system level performance reporting. So we could also give them our feedback in terms of what we find helpful or not helpful. And it may, the greatest benefit, maybe just during the conversation to say, how would we want to look at returns to home assistance?
Is HUD giving us all the, like, are we compared to others and are we getting that information or not?
We haven't yet. They have their stated intent is to compare us to ourselves over time, not to compare us to other COCs, but I haven't seen a report that shows, you know, how everybody's doing on these measures, although it does take a long time to produce reports, so I would kind of expect if we're going to get one, it would be a year after the first time we turn it in, so maybe we'll see something over the top.
And these are the HARF measures, so these are in the HARF legislation. I've been with USIC very deliberately, so I think we can build one, but there are good reasons as well, not just for us.
Maybe I can see what I can find around any descriptive justification or reasoning behind how the measures were created. I'm not sure I can find that, but if I can, I'll share.
And also, if you're trying to capture the data we want locally, that HUD is asking, the cost per exit is so different from type of program to type of program, and that is extremely relevant to decision making. So I think we should try to capture that every chance we get.
That's not an HMIS.
Right, I know, right. But it's just,
I like to have it from that.
I've seen it in the focus strategies, but I think we can get so misled by this. If you don't have some common sense standard information in there, it ends up being more misleading than
so we look at the way that HUD's measuring the return to homelessness here on this slide.
On page 2, you also see the overall percentage of return to homelessness was 12%.
Yeah, well, you're tracking along with the modular document. So this data is reported at less than 6 months, 6 to 12 months, 13 to 24 months, and then the whole 2 years. And for emergency shelter returns to homelessness in less than 6 months is at 14%, and in that 6 to 12 month range, 3%. 13 to 24 months is 4%, and then the total of 2 years is 21%. The next bar is, the green bars are transitional housing, and then the purple bars are permanent housing. So we can see when we get over to exit from permanent housing and over the two-year period, it's 2%. And we see the trend you might expect to see. So more intensive interventions of transitional housing and permanent housing, returns are less. To measure three, that's the number of the homeless person. We're reporting this in two ways. First, in a point in time count, sheltered and unsheltered. So that would be our 2015 count, although we'll soon have our 2017 count data. And then also reporting over the course of the year. And what we want to see on this measure is reduction in number of persons per homeless. So the first chart, metric 3.1, is our point in time count. And this is the 2015 count, when we, which is the last one we had unsheltered. Total homeless persons, 2,659. We move to metric 3.2. This is our HMIS count of homeless persons served over the course of 12-month period, October 1st, 2014 to September 30th, 2015.
Michelle, are those numbers unduplicated?
Yes.
So 4,737
different
individuals.
Total.
Or different enter. Different people or different entries?
It's unduplicated, right? Persons, whether they entered a program 10 times or one time.
But it's only shelter.
Right, right. This is our HMIS data. It's only people in programs.
Cindy, it's sheltered and transitional housing. They're just non-permanent housing.
Right. I just mean, so it's not unsheltered.
Right. So that broke further broken down, the 4,737. In emergency shelter, it was 3,496, and in transitional, it was 1,518.
So family four would be four, is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
So for unsheltered, we only have the three.
For this, I mean, we also have now, we have our community queue, we have people who have had a BIS for that, and our typical program for on the street. In that street outreach program that then. We move on to measure four. This is the employment and income growth measure. This is the one that is for HUD COC projects only, and there are quite a few metrics embedded within this performance measure. So starting off, and it's split by stayers and leavers. Stayers are people, these are HUD terms, and stayers are people who remain in program at the end of the reporting period, and leavers are people who have left the program at some point during that reporting period. And then within those two buckets, we'll look at change in employment income, change in non-employment income, and change in total cash income, and for the stayers and then for the leavers. Look at the actual charts. We split these into two charts. This last month, one for the stayers and one for the leavers. This font is pretty tiny here, but for the change in employment income, there was a 3% change for stayers. For the metric non-employment income, the change is 7%, and then 4.3%.
Jen?
Just a point of clarification. Is the percent change the change in the income or the percent of people who is paying for the change?
It's actually, I misspoke. It is the people, the persons whose income changed. Yeah.
So, Michelle, it's only if their income changed during this period. So even if they were in the program longer, the right. only portion is the time, right?
Correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. So if a person entered a program, a PSH program, this happens quite often. The first year they may experience an increase in income as they get connected with services and the benefits to which they're entitled, and then that income remains stable and doesn't increase again over 5 to 10 years in the program.
Brian?
Is a change in income, is that a positive change, or could it also be a negative change?
Well, it can be a negative change, but what we're measuring is an increase.
That's a good question.
And then to call it the same thing, is the change is measuring about 50 cents? I mean, is there a benchmark or just any upward movement of all
right. the change?
And I'm sorry, help me, so 3% means 3% of the people that were stayers had an increase, okay.
And a stayer could be in any intervention. It could be in permanent housing, they're considered a stayer.
Right.
If they exited the permanent support of housing.
And in the HUD COC project. Yeah.
In that CLC project. Yeah. So it's hard to know what it means, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't give you much depth.
No.
Right.
But could we break this down by project or project type?
Yeah.
And I think this is one, too, where the project level report with the APR tells us a lot more about people and programs.
And you have the data about how much, like, the income changed, presumably. So at some point you could say, of these, you know, half of them's increased by, you know, $100 or whatever. But something that then gives this more depth of what it tells.
You can compare program types and populations.
Right.
Served.
Okay.
Yep. So when all the projects go in front of the performance review, at the end of, well, at the beginning of each new competition, all of that information is broken down per project and in categories. And SSF provides it to each of us for the opportunity to correct or make changes before it goes forward to the committee with the rest of our application.
So is that something that's appropriate to share? Does it feed into this in a project by project?
We haven't done that before, but we
But you would think from the committee's perspective, as they're reviewing stuff, that would be helpful information to know.
Yeah, and the committee knows.
Yeah, the committee gets projects.
Okay.
Yeah, so another way to look at this, if 3% of the stayers have changed, have had a change in income.
That from means, employment. Mm-hmm. Sorry, from employment.
From employment. That means that 97% have not or have decreased. That's the other
right.
way of looking at it. Mm-hmm.
Have not had
a change in income.
For that time period.
Yeah.
Or they've decreased.
But yes. Yeah.
We don't know.
Yes.
At each project level, ATR looks at that data, whether or not clients had a decrease or increase in their income, or they stay the same, so there's a different margin. But this ATR, I mean, this system performance report only looks at the increase, if there was an overall system-wide had employment income increase or had.
And again, system types skew this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rapid rehousing is intended to help people say when they're out of court.
and pay their rent for that time period. And when they can pay their own rent, they become a leaver.
Right.
That's why the leaver, you know.
The leaver number is much higher, sure.
Yeah. Proportionately, we have a lot of rapid housing, so that may obviously contribute. So you have to look at this as narrowly defined by HUD and not like
the context
other things
is
into it.
The
context is everything.
Right. Okay. So we do need to pick up the pace. We have another presentation today. So I would like to move on to the lever slide that real quickly. See the increases in income are greater for folks with less assistance. I expect to see that. And some kind of increase in the total cash income, whether it's from employment or not, non-employment. Moving to measure 5, that's the number of persons who become homeless for the first time. This measures all clients who were served during the reporting period, who did not have HMIS entries in emergency shelter, transitional housing, or permanent housing in the previous 24 months. So those are, who are being counted as first-time homeless. With two metrics. Metric 5.1 is persons newly entering emergency shelter and transitional housing projects. And measure 5.2 is persons entering both those project types and permanent housing projects. First time. And the desired outcome is a reduction in the number of persons who become homeless for the first time. We take a look at.
And can you just clarify again, permanent housing there means rapid rehousing or permanent
housing? Correct. So if we look at the data for 5.1, ...3,937 persons entered emergency shelter or transitional housing. 3,123 newly entered first-time homeless in the previous 24 months they have not entered the system before.
So they're no. I want to be clear, they're new to us.
Right.
They may not be new to homelessness. This isn't a turnstile. This is the first time I'm experiencing homelessness. This is new to us as a system.
And if you were homeless more than 2 years ago, you'll be counted as newly homeless again.
Right.
Did you say that again, Ryan?
Sometimes this metric, when I first read this report, I was like, wow, we have 3,000 people become homeless.
Yeah.
Well, there's no turnstile that you walk through as you become homeless. So this is just, they've come to the system and been identified as homeless for the first time to the system.
The first time in 2 years.
First time in 2 years, correct.
So they could have been homeless 3 years ago, and they could and then how about they went from emergency shelter, so there's one count, and then they moved to transitional housing. Is that a second count, or is that the same person? Right, because I'm trying to understand how much of this is unduplicated.
It's newly entered, that person who entered the system through emergency shelter would just be counted for that entry, when they then moved on to transitional, they would be counted.
Dion, Aaron, and then David.
Just a quick question, not diving into each indice, but okay, so these are benchmarks from HUD, so now I have to move it accordingly. Is there a weighted measure, or is there something that Steps Forward will be presenting to say, every decision we make, how do we anticipate that affecting this benchmark? Because the benchmark's going to then affect our funding. So I want to kind of take it back up to that 30,000 foot level of how we, knowing this, whether we love them or hate them, but how we, manipulating the data to make sure that we're getting the most, right? And so, you know, to your point, the 3,000, we didn't have outreach workers for a long period of time, so we just went out. We've taken an intake, just a huge number of people that may have never accessed the system, that's good for us because we can move those numbers. So are you guys strategizing, or is there going to be a committee that kind of look at how the decisions we try to make could positively or negatively affect our outcome with it?
What I like to do is have the leadership committee, comprised of the executive committee and the co-chairs of the other committees, have that conversation, make sure that we've got each metric assigned to an existing committee or to staff, or a very clear
a cycle of who's keeping track of this, that we report back to you on it regularly, and that we do have a strategy for how our performance on these measures inform decisions. So that needs to be built, but right. We definitely want
to. So Michelle, the strategy right now, as you articulated, would then be developed within the leadership group and possibly within multiple committees.
That would be allocated out to the committees of the appropriate match to whatever.
So that seems a little, I'm just going to comment, a little unwieldy in terms of a focused, what does this tell us? It seems a little diffuse.
Well, I think we'll take this data and break it down into something more meaningful locally. I mean, clearly, as we go through this, we have more questions based on this higher level review of outcomes. But I think that should be reviewed by a single body that can meet more often. And then there's going to be, out of that, I would hope, some deliverables that help us get better outcomes. And those tasks would be held within some more subcommittees.
And back to, HUD is going to use this, you've basically established benchmarks, and then presumably they're not comparing us to anybody else, they're just going to compare, okay, this last time 3%, and you know, if then they're looking for you next time to have that be 10%.
Do we have the same data for, I'm sorry to just do a button this key. Always my math.
Money.
do we have the same data? Could we compare year over year? So could we compare for, we have 14, 15 here, could we compare 13, 14, and 15, 16 so that we're looking at 3 years across the board so we can see that we're making progress?
Yeah, and the, we're pulling the data for the 15, 16 now to report to HUD by May 31st. So we'll have this data set plus the next cycle.
So
we can apply the any time frame we want. So we can also go backwards if we want.
But I think it would be useful to look at that over whatever period of time you feel you guys feel is relevant. But definitely for the, you know, in my view, 14, 15 we have here, we definitely need to look at 15, 16. And you guys could decide whether you think 13, 14 would be appropriate, but I think it would show us some trends in some direction, and then we could try to come up with explanations for why.
Yeah, I think once we have that second year, it would be an interesting conversation. But I think we need, I think we certainly have needed the time to just talk a little bit about all the pieces. So, but that'll be happening fairly soon, for 2016.
Erin, I was with Dan that we put a focus on it here, so of course the number is larger. I mean that.
And David,
did you?
Amani, can you
help us? Yeah.
David?
Well, yeah, especially the first time in the home assistant, talking to some of the SAC Community Impact Officers that were running around Ahern and talking to them, they were telling me, which I thought was interesting, that the majority of the people that they've run into lately have been from out of state or out of county, that they're running their licenses as far as the people that they see currently on the streets. We see the big influx on our street, and that's what they were telling me. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And this is what they're telling me, being on the streets, that this could be part of the reason for this first time we're getting people. I mean, I know we've talked about that.
We're at 66% for individuals that state that they became homeless. And then the others are regional, within the state, and outside, and all of those are within 10 to 12%.
Okay. I just thought it was kind of...
Yeah, I hear the same thing. Yeah. The officers tell me the same thing.
Yeah.
I'd like to go back to Amani so that everyone does get a chance. And I think the time we're spending on this is our primary function. Mm-hmm. We should ask all of these questions. It's extremely helpful, this process. But I'm trying to be fair, too, in terms of everyone getting a chance.
Is this a regional, are these numbers regional, or are they just Sacramento?
Sacramento, continuum of care.
Also, just to keep in mind, he's a person, so this does include children as well. So that sometimes we see these big numbers. So they're not by household, so they're including the kids in there too. So also, a lot of impact on the HMI's coverage will play a factor in here too. So as we bring in new shelters and new projects on board to participate in HMIS, this number over time, we could also see increase too. Is that, you know, starting from last year, we didn't have much coverage. You know, like we added several shelters this year, that next year's numbers possibly could have a factor on there.
I was going to a bit respond to David's comment. I think it's very easy for us to jump to what this might mean. We're all doing it, right? Like, oh, I think this means that. And so the more data we can get, I want to do my own jump to now, though. Which is when we looked at the shelters in that more deep study through Focus, that is, you all did, a high percentage of folks come from housed situations. And so I think thinking about prevention and diversion and actually, you know, not having folks enter if they are in fact housed, even if unstable. Because as you can see, once you enter, you're not necessarily going to exit to stable housing. But that's my jump.
And I want to add my underlining. The only point in all of this that captures unsheltered is the point in time. And we had more unsheltered than we had in any other category. So when you trace through, that largest group is never captured.
Because
they're not in any of the programs. So again, context is everything. But when we're tasked with doing something about homelessness for the ordinary person, I think what they are talking about is, let us not have people living outside on our streets and rivers. And so all of this is important, but again, context is everything. The bulk of people who come to Loaves and Fishes aren't captured here, for instance.
Okay, just to the navigators, and through, we are interested people into HMIS. And I'd love to get Loaves and Fishes involved in that so that you could enter too, so we do capture these people. Because that's, I mean, that's a really important point you make, but it's also a huge gap in the system. So the more groups that we have that maybe are not providing housing, but are providing triage or services that can enter them into HMIS, we get a better picture of who they are and how best to help them.
And there is a street outreach measure embedded in number 7. And as these programs, as our outreach programs are online longer, we'll be able to show that data.
But I just think your point, though, of context, even as you're looking at these, having something that reflects that this is still, you know, that you almost always have the bar of the unsheltered people here, just to give it that kind of context of helping people get, you know, we're still, there's a huge part of the population we aren't touching.
Yeah, of the I get a monthly report that looks at the intakes from the VICDAP. And individuals is consistently, and this is individuals that we confirmed the last 90 days to be experiencing homelessness. And it has leveled off that it's always 2,000 something. It never goes over 3,000, but it's within that 2,400 or so for the singles. On the families, it's generally households, 1,000. It's usually at 1,000, 15,000.
That's anxious.
That have been contacted, and on the families is the area that we keep trying to go back to figure out. Did you, were you housed when you took this interview? Were you coming into a DHA where the interview was done? The singles is a little easier because the majority of those were done by one of the outreach personnel, and they're doing intakes on individuals at 200 a month on average, between 195 to 200.
But since shelters are doing VIS for that, it seems like it includes sheltered and unsheltered.
There may be some, but the majority of those that are those intakes were happening through the Navigator program.
For families too.
Families too, although the families we have trained over at DHA, and so they're doing intakes there. At a greater clip for the families, that's more often the case there. Okay.
And shelters are doing it as
well. We do have shelters that do it there.
Shelters are trained to do VIS for that. On the single side, navigators are doing the majority. But shelters, yes. Do that too. All right, can we, we'll move on to metric 5.2.
Good job, Michelle.
This one includes, this one differs from 5.1 in that it also includes you mentioned into permanent housing, which is the BSHM. The total is 4,659 with 3,640 newly entering and reporting. Okay. So number six is the prevention measure. The Sacramento COC does not use HUD COC program resources for prevention, so we do not have data for this measure, but it's not applicable to our continuum. A COC must be a high-performing community as defined by HARD to use COC program resources for prevention. We're not a high-performing community yet, and in 2016, no COCs have been designated as such.
So apparently we're a good company.
I like that last sentence.
That's absolutely a good sentence.
I don't understand why you can't get prevention dollars until you're high-performing. Because of all performance.
And it has to do with our performance on reducing homelessness, among other things.
So if you have no homeless people, then you can
right.
use them.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to go to number seven, which is the last measure. It includes successful outreach placements and then successful permanent housing placements and retention of permanent housing. So there's three metrics associated with this measure, including the first one relates to street outreach, so the count of persons who exited to someplace other than the street or jail as a successful exit, so getting to a somewhat safer place is the metric for the success of street outreach. Metric 7B1 counts those who exited from emergency shelter, transitional housing, and rapid rehousing projects to a permanent housing destination. And 7B2 counts those who remain in permanent housing projects and those who exited to permanent housing destinations. And if we look at the actual data, so the first bar then is the successful street outreach measure, and we're showing here that 86% of exits from the street outreach were successful. Yes, ma'am.
Can you clarify the outreach number, Michelle? Does that include only people where you have a known destination, or is that everybody, including those who have been lost? It seems
this is the
high.
Percentage here are just the successful exits.
But I mean, is it of all of the people you encountered, or is it only of the people where you haven't known?
It's all who exited, and what percent of those exited?
So including the people we exited because we lost contact.
So if you look at the actual report, it will give you the total exited, and then total that exited to temporary or institution, and then total that exited to permanent. It's on page 6, last, very first part, 7.
Yeah. So it's already taking off the top people who a navigator, for example, might have contacted and they never heard from them again. Those people are not included.
If they were exiting out of the outreach, yes. They are included in the total person who exited.
So maybe my question is that when do you exit somebody, if I encounter Joan and I never hear from her again, do I exit her in 90 days? So is she included in that? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
In other words, when you look at the navigator sheets, most of the folks, a large number of folks who lose contact with, are you saying those are in this percent?
I think it's not, because now you look at the raw numbers, only 200 of them. So I think I answered my own question.
Yeah. Well, can you answer it for the group?
Okay. Well, never mind, I just answered it. It looks to me as if the universe of people who have exited street outreach is 208 people. I just know from what you've shared with me, the universe of people you've encountered is 3,000. So this is a small subset of the people that the outreach team is touching, only those where you have a known exit.
And, well, just also remind everyone that the reporting time frame is especially important for this metric.
Oh, okay.
Because we didn't really start outreach until the beginning of 2015. So we've got a lot more people in the system and outreach being conducted. In at least as tracked in HMIS.
So how would you answer then Emily's original question, given that who is counted as an exit and who, yeah, who's counted?
This looks at anyone who's been exited from the program. So if a person is still in the program but we've lost contact with them, they would not be counted in this because they haven't been exited. The protocol is to exit clients after 90 days of no contact, but that could be, a person could have contact with the emergency shelter system but not the navigator, and then we wouldn't remove them because we're reluctant to remove people in general if there's any way we can verify that they're still homeless. And that's an outreach practice that we need to standardize better when we actually do the exiting.
The measurement is successful placements. So that measurement doesn't that mean successful placement would not mean lost people. That means the people we successfully placed. So it doesn't, it can't include the lost people if it's a successful placement.
So what's the percentage?
In the total exit, in the universe of persons who exit street outreach.
Right.
So even though it says successful placement as the measurement.
So if I exited 10 people, because as you can see, the 24 and 154 doesn't equal to 208, right? So the other remaining were exited to some sort of a negative exit. So that could be no contact back to the street. It could be went to jail. So any of those factors will apply. So 208 was a total who was, we put the exit date and said they either lost contact, or they went to a shelter, or they went to permanent housing, or they went to jail, whatever. So it took that total number, and then they did the positive out of that. What is the positive outcome out of those people? So 24 of them, because the HIVE still looks at the temporary situations and institution as a positive, so 24 people went to that type of destination. 150 of, under 54 of them went to some sort of a permanent exit. Out of the all 208, I consider 86% were the successful exits. So yes, it will count those who we lost contact if we had put the exit date and noted that client had no.
Can I try a different way? Because so in this, I know this is a small subset of time. In this subset of time, is 208 equal to the number of contacts that navigators made?
No. It's the number of individuals who they previously contacted who exited. And when they exited, as Manjeet said, it could have been if they exited back to homelessness somewhere else or no longer touching the system, or they went to permanent housing.
I get that. Okay, so there's a whole host of, or I don't know how many.
There's a whole host of others that are still very homeless, but they're still in contact with us. There's not reflected.
Okay, that's helpful. It would be a stair. Thank you. Metric 72 is the successful exit from emergency transitional and rapid housing. 62% of all exits were to permanent housing from those locations.
Michelle, could you repeat that? I'm sorry, I cannot.
62% of exits were positive exits from, when we look at all exits from emergency shelter, transitional housing, and rapid rehousing.
So the last slide, you're just breaking up, you're just separating permanent housing, but in this last slide, that does not include rapid rehousing, or is that as permanent housing?
For the third
one. The third one. That third one is just permanent?
Permanent housing includes permanent supportive housing and rapid rehousing.
Okay. So, but it's... I'm just confused why the two slides
are... I'm sorry, the last chart does not include rapid rehousing. It's only the regular.
Yeah, that's what I'm asking. So the last slide is just permanent.
We're talking about the third bar, which is remaining in permanent housing projects and those who exited to permanent housing destinations. So this is the measure that counts retention in permanent supportive housing as a positive or an exit to another permanent housing destination.
Well, that's what I mean. So if I was to look at this chart and say, wow, the most success in this graph are people that are exiting from permanent housing, have more retention. I mean, that's the highest rate of retention in the state, right? I mean, I'm trying to figure out what's the best successful, obviously.
And this includes the folks who remain in PSH. That's what's contributing to that.
Okay, gotcha. So they're the stayer version.
PSH only.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
It says PH, but it's PSH. That last bar.
Permanent housing, but not roughly enough.
Rapid housing is included in the second metric, but not the third.
But I think where we get confused is this also includes people who buy their own house, who move in with their new wife or whatever, right? That's not permanent housing. Yeah.
Folks in their old house. Yeah,
down by the old house. There's another percentage later. It's called 100.
For more information, you can visit this link on the HUD exchange.
We'll have a conversation with the legal committee around how to perform some of those measures and working to develop strategies to ensure that we perform well, and we will come back with the leadership committee. That's our data metrics submitted. At the leadership committee, we'll bring back this report. Tells you what HUD's looking at, so this is, I want you to know that, as painful as it is to go through it. But clearly, we want a more refined, more granular report that looks at our systems and programs and outcomes. So, and we will then provide that for us to make decisions. But I wanted to start here so that you all know that what we go through at SSF with talking to HUD that we're reporting on. So.
Thank you, Michelle. Your depth of knowledge is extraordinary. And it bears reminding this is what gets us all the money. And when we're impatient sometimes for real data that makes sense, your primary duty is to produce the data that our funder wants.
That makes no sense.
Thank you.
I recorded this briefing to send it
out. And you'll send that out electronically.
Yes. It doesn't make much sense to try to do
this. Yeah, but I want to respect your research and give you the time that you need to report out on.
Sure. So I'll just hold off on this.
Okay. So I just want to say, Bob did, we worked in collaboration with Bob on doing a survey that's been done in the past. I think we did 2009, 2010.
We did a survey at Homeless Connect in 2009, 2010. This time we did. We thought that in 2009-2010, that was during the pretty deep recession, we were thinking that maybe the Homeless Employment and Income Committee thought that maybe if last year, if we, about this time, if we did the survey again, it might show some differences, and actually it does, in some places, pretty significant differences in employment for people experiencing homelessness. So we did ultimately 400 surveys. About half of that were, a little over half were people who were currently homeless. And then we did them all at Next Move when Bill was still there, of people who were recently homeless, now into permanent housing. We wanted to see if there was a difference. So we're actually the report that you, the findings that you've got in front of you are only for the first couple hundred people experiencing homelessness, and then we'll do a second report comparing the two.
We'll invite that we come back to present at the next advisory board to go through that. And out of that were some recommendations that the employment committee is looking at that will be refined and then brought to this group to review and see what we want to do.
So I would ask that you embargo that report. It's interesting to look at. From, again, as Jan was saying, from the 30,000 foot level, it was interesting for me to sit and look at the employment stats that you had as one of your measures, how what we found sort of mirrors to some degree, high rates of unemployment, et cetera, et cetera. So if you could just hold on to that report, because it hasn't been published. Our ultimate goal is to do a press release with the mayor and the board of supervisors, brief the city council and the board of supervisors on what we found. Because at the something like Bill, at the end of the day, this is a great opportunity to talk about coordinated exit, not just coordinated entry.
And Supervisor Cernan at one of the recent meetings talked about looking at county jobs as a potential for employment issues. So the timing is very good. Great. Bob, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure.
And Michelle, since we have 5 minutes left, the HUD update.
Sure.
And we will forego community updates.
HUD, I've got several updates for you that I will send out electronically, including this is one pagers on HUD notice regarding equal access and gender identity, as well as the Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act. Both of those issues are being monitored in the as part of ensuring that providers have appropriate policies and procedures as part of the performance review threshold criteria. So we are aware of these regulations and are looking to see them reflected in policies and procedures. And then we've also done some training on those topics. That HUD update that is most relevant, I think, to this advisory board is the coordinated entry requirements checklist, which your coordinated entry system committee has already been delving into. It does outline quite a few different requirements for a successful coordinated entry system from HUD's perspective. We have until the beginning of 2018 to implement or ensure that we have all of the required elements, and that there's another layer of optional elements, but almost everything in this rather lengthy checklist is required. And I don't know if John or Andrew want to say anything about that process so far, but that's the big, biggest news from HUD.
I think the main thing to say is that we'll want to make a report to you way before the end of the year, so you know that we're how successful we're or not we're being, because we really do have to be able to check all those boxes by the end of January. And Andrew is doing, I think, a good job with the staff support to put that together. And Jen is, actually, we've got a working group that meets for 3 hours every month besides the regular committee meeting, just to focus on being able to go through this. It's quite a lot of work, actually.
Thank you. We have time for a very few brief announcements. Anyone has one? Bob.
I wanted to thank Quinn Cottages and David individually for hosting the kickoff of our Home Speakers Bureau, and especially to Mayor Steinberg and to the Supervisor Sooner for attending the kickoff last week. So I do have some brochures for you. These are basically about the Homeless Speakers Bureau. We have recruited about 15 incredibly powerful speakers, many from Quinn Cottages, including David, as well as Women in Empowerment and other programs. So if your church or synagogue or community group or neighborhood association or business improvement district, et cetera, would like a speaker or two, you can go online and fill out the request a speaker form. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else, Kat?
I was just going to mention there is an online today, and then it'll be in the paper tomorrow, an editorial by Lachelle on homelessness, so people haven't seen it.
I think it's last night.
Is it in today?
Yeah, it came last night.
Thank you.
Can I just have a question? So are we, how does Open up to, like, register for the notebook, right? Could you just explain what that means?
That is the first step in the annual competition. So Sacramento Stroke is going to go into the EFAPS online system and complete the registration form to say, yes, this community does want to seek its renewal and any voter permits. So that's a pretty straightforward process, but it does signal the beginning of this year's
Sarah. Can I just ask a quick question? Following the president's skinny budget for 2018, I wasn't following the homeless more on the HCD side. What is it, what's being proposed right now? And I know it'll change, of course, I hope. But is there a cut to the homeless programs, or is it an increase?
There was no cut to.
Or was it anything mentioned at all? Silent?
Just CDBG, block grants, your world.
Yes, my world. Yep. But
home,
not the homeless.
202. Yeah.
Elimination of the
interagency.
Oh, yeah, I did see that, but nothing related to the homeless at this point.
Right.
That's good news.
I was just going to make a meeting adjourned.
I'm sorry. I'm good. I'm just catching up.
I'm trying to actually schedule a meeting with you for the questionnaires. That's the biggest gap. V is good with that, as far as the privacy and security piece, they come over that piece thing. So now he's just trying to figure out who's going to take the lead in that data entry and exit. So we're trying to see if there's like, we gotta do things.
Probably not.
Hopefully not a lot.
I don't know why this was so far.